The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Happy Wednesday to you here, and I think all those old commercials are coming back now, so I guess it's okay to once again say Happy Hump Day. I think it's finally hip again, maybe, but nonetheless, this is the Brad Sessmatt Show, streaming live on sports360az.com. In case you haven't noticed, I'm not Brad Sessmatt. I'm Devin Henry, filling in today for the big man, and then filling in for the other big man who's usually here on Wednesdays, Jordan Hamm. So I guess I officially got the call up to varsity. I mean, I guess I'll take that whether it's by default or not, but nonetheless, we still got your big Arizona sports stories for you here on sports360az.com and the Brad Sessmatt Show. I am Devin Henry, and we got plenty to get into coming up today. We are going to have Kevin Mawai talking to Brad here in just about 10 minutes or so. He's going to talk about not only being on, once again, the Pro Football Hall of Fame ballot, but also his first year under Herm Edwards over at Arizona State. And on top of that, as well as O-line career, be sure to stick around for that. And after that, be sure to stick around. We're going to have some fun. I'm a big motorsports head. As Brad would say, I'm a gearhead. I'm into the sport of speed, as he would say. And I'm going to bring a little bit of that onto the Brad Sessmatt Show today. We are talking to one of the best race car drivers to come out of the state of Arizona last few decades, really. J.J. Yaley, live from the Chili Bowl Nationals. Today's his qualifying day. We are going to bug him for about 10 minutes here on the Brad Sessmatt Show to talk to him about the Chili Bowl Nationals, one of the biggest races in the world happening right now in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I know what you're thinking. When in the world ever happens in Tulsa, Oklahoma? Well, it's January, so this is the one thing, basically. But nonetheless, Tulsa is a fun place to be this time of year. And last time I was there was the first official icing where everything iced, and I thought it'd be fun to fall back to the snow until I realized, no, it was not snow. That was, in fact, ice. But nonetheless, Chili Bowl Nationals is a fun place to be. Imagine taking 360 of the best basketball players in the world, not the NBA, the world over, playing them over the span of 6 days in a one-on-one tournament. That's the Chili Bowl Nationals in racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, drag racing, off-road series, you name it, everything is here racing some midget dirt cars out in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We're hoping to also get one more guest calling in from the Chili Bowl Nationals from the state of Arizona, but we'll see as far as we get here today on the Brad Sessmatt Show. So to start things off, I wanted to do something different. So what's the big headline? Well, Suns were obliterated last night. ASU basketball is losing. U of A is being a little bit silent on the basketball chart, but still winning games at the very least, so that's nice. Cardinals are hiring their coaching staff. They have the number one pick overall, but we talk about that, seems like, every single day. Don't want to be a broken record on that. And the Coyotes, I'll let Jordan and them talk to you about the Coyotes. I don't think I'm the one qualified enough to talk to you about how the Coyotes are still in the playoff hunt. So what's different? What's something different that I can give you guys? You know, even the D-backs are losing players just during this offseason. So I looked around a little bit. On Monday, there was an ESPN reporter who wrote down his all-rookie team in the NFL. And sitting at center, the offensive line, as we're talking about, talking to Kevin Mawai here in a little bit, I talked on AZ Audibles last week, and that's on Brad Sessmatt's Football AZ. You can watch that on Fox Sports Arizona throughout the week. This week we're talking about high school coaches. But nonetheless, we talked about supporting characters, supporting players, the best supporting athletes in high school football. And I turn to what I think is the least appreciated of the group, and that's the offensive line. There's no stats on them. You can't tell a stat on an offensive lineman to tell how good they are. And when they lose, it's their fault because they don't give the quarterback much protection. Typically, that's true why they lose. But when they win the Super Bowl, you know, maybe you'll say, that was a good block. That's about it, though. They don't get a lot of credit. And so at the center position on the all-rookie team for this ESPN writer was Mason Cole, a guy who wasn't even supposed to play a snap this year for the Arizona Cardinals. With that being said, neither was Josh Rosen, but here we are. A.Q. Shipley gets hurt, so Mason Cole jumps in. Sam Bradford, unfortunately, just doesn't perform. Therefore, Josh Rosen steps into the quarterback position. So I think it's really cool having this rookie center, a position that goes almost unnoticed. He has an Ironman streak now. Going back to his days in high school, he hasn't missed a single snap. He didn't miss a single snap this year. Being 22, he's the same age as me, guys. He is the same age as me, and he was the only consistent offensive lineman in this wild rotation that the Cardinals had due to injury. When you look at the Cardinals and the youth that this team's going to have, just look on the offensive side of the ball. There's Mason Cole, who is one of the best rookies, I would say, especially when it comes to the center position now, obviously. Josh Rosen at the QB spot. Christian Kirk had a phenomenal year. On dates where Larry Fitzgerald is being doubled or triple teamed in zone, Christian Kirk ends up being the number one receiver, a rookie on this young team. Then let's look at the draft. Number one pick in all seven rounds. Then on top of that, three compensatory picks as well, possibly. I think it was Darren Urban who wrote a good piece on what that actually means. There might be 10 picks for the Arizona Cardinals here in the first round of the NFL draft. On top of that, what if you don't want the number one pick if you're the Arizona Cardinals? Kyler Murray just declared for the draft. I know Jordan talked about it on Monday. The draft class is a little bit thin this year coming out of college. But what if there is a team who really wants to jump up to number one? Do the Cardinals pick up 3 more draft picks? 13 picks in this year's NFL draft on top of the rookie stardom? Maybe a little bit too early to say that, but the strong rookie class that the Cardinals brought in, 3 rookies, sometimes even more than that, would be on the offensive field for the Arizona Cardinals. I think that that is phenomenal for the Cardinals coming after a 3-13 season to have highlights saying the center, the next receiver if Larry Fitzgerald doesn't end up coming back, and the future of the quarterback position looks bright in year number one. How often does that happen? And I know that there's plenty of guys out there who are going to just bang and bang and bang on the Arizona Cardinals for what they are, who the owner is, so on, so forth, so far. But the Arizona Cardinals look like they're in a good spot going into 2019 and 2020. I know that that's just speculation. You can't say anything else because we're not going anywhere else, guys. We have to wait until the draft happens to even talk about anything, to be honest with you. But nonetheless, it looks good for the Cardinals when it comes down to youth. Like I said, you can always listen to AZ Audibles on Fox Sports Arizona, the Brad Sesmat Football AZ Show. We talk plenty more about football in the state of Arizona. Before I start whipping this thing out of time, I do want to talk about the Phoenix Suns. They got absolutely pounded by the Indiana Pacers last night. Booker just looked completely defeated on the bench. I understand this was his first game back from back spasms, maybe something else too, who knows, but it's just tough watching these games where in the third quarter, you know that this team just doesn't have a shot to win a game. You go back to last Wednesday when the Phoenix Suns played the Dallas Mavericks, and we already started talking about the number two pick in the NBA draft in 2018, Luka Doncic, who is doing phenomenal. Might make the All-Star team this year as a rookie. Meanwhile, we picked DeAndre Ayton in Phoenix instead of going with Luka Doncic. Well, here's the deal with that. Did you need another Devin Booker? That's the number one question that I asked people who are criticizing DeAndre Ayton and the Phoenix Suns for picking Ayton over Luka for the number one pick. Did you need a second Devin Booker? I mean, Doncic and Booker have a lot in common when it comes to being able to score and being able to be on the offensive side of the ball. Did you need that? Is the center position coming back in the NBA? Some would say yes. I think that even though Luka Doncic will probably make the All-Star team this year, DeAndre Ayton is a good grab. Dragan Bender, yeah, he's on the second string now. Maybe he doesn't stay around too much longer, but nonetheless, is the center position back? Does DeAndre Ayton need to rebound better? Does DeAndre Ayton need to shoot from more outside for jump shots better? Yeah. Yeah, he does. But he's a rookie. And you can't look at Doncic, who has been playing professional since he was a teenager, and say that this is the same kind of growth. It's not. So give the Suns some time, as much as I personally hate to say it because of how bad this team is. They're the second worst team in the league now with the Cavaliers now only having, what, 9-10 wins. But nonetheless, don't have a lot of time left here in segment number one. We have the Hall of Famer on the ballot this year, Kevin Mawai, coming up here on the Brad Sesmat Show. And, of course, that whole rundown and everything going on for Sports 360 AZ on the Brad Sesmat Show is brought to you by Sagicor. Now, Sagicor, protect what matters most, and you do that with life insurance. Brad is actually licensed with Sagicor. He works for Sagicor. If Brad did not believe that protecting yourself with life insurance was the right thing to do, and Sagicor wasn't the right people to do it with, he wouldn't be there. But he is. Give Sagicor a call. Protect what matters most. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. JJ Yaley coming up here in just about 20 minutes, but coming up next year on the Brad Sesmat Show, it's Kevin Mawai.
Let's turn our attention now to the Super Bowl, and one of the neat parts of that whole week is the Hall of Fame. The Pro Football Hall of Fame has their finalist list out, and Kevin Mawai is on the list, the former NFL center, 8-time Pro Bowl offensive lineman, has been part of Herm Edwards' staff for just less than a year now. We wanted to have Kevin on because this is a huge week coming up for him with the Super Bowl, A, B, you've been on the job with Herm for just less than a year now, and just curious on how it's all worked out. How are you, Kevin?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Sure, sure. Less than a year into it at Arizona State. Let's start there with the Sun Devils. How do you think it's worked out for you?
Well, for me personally, it's worked out really well. You know, I enjoy my role. You know, I don't think anybody ever wants to be an analyst for their whole career, and that's certainly not my case. But, you know, being with Herm and reunited with him, it's been a great opportunity. We got a great staff. I get to work closely with Dave Christensen, our offensive line coach, and help in any capacity that I can. But we had Herm put together a great staff and a lot of great men that I'm learning from, guys that get to teach some of the things I know. And we got a good young auxiliary staff, our GAs and stuff. So I'm in a great situation. And not to mention that my daughter, her dorm is like 100 yards from the stadium. She's on the swim team here. So it works out perfectly for me. And it's been a great year.
What was your biggest takeaway from year one, being in the college game?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just, one, you have to understanding the young men and, you know, where they come from, a little bit more immature than maybe the NFL guys, that world that I've lived in for such a long time. And, you know, a lot of these kids are my kids' age now. So you got to understand that aspect of it and being able to, you know, work within their reality. And then the other part of it is the recruiting aspect and how much time you really have to spend evaluating, recruiting. Though I'm not on the road, can't be on the road, I have an opportunity to work with our personnel department here and, you know, things like that. So you get to see more of the behind-the-scenes things of what goes on into building the college program.
So as an analyst in that space, a freshman may show up on someone's radar who's a big kid who has a little bit of playing experience behind them. You evaluate that 14, 15, 16-year-old, track them, follow. Is that how it works in your space there?
Yeah, that, you know, and it's so hard because it's hard to evaluate a 14-year-old kid who hasn't grown into himself yet. You know, you try to predict, you know, what he's going to be like in the future, his length, his size, his ability and athletic ability. He might look clumsy now, but, you know, a year from now he develops. And so that's pretty unique. And then, you know, for me too, the game itself and being able to do a self-evaluation of our offense and, you know, what worked, what didn't work. The game is quite different than the pro game is, and trying to find the similarities and how that works. So that's another challenge to this job.
How do you measure a motor of a kid that you're recruiting at the offensive line position?
You know, I think more than anything is just watch how he finishes. You know, there's contact and he just stands around, or is he, you know, trying to block the guy out of the film or off the field, or, you know, finishing the guy. You know, there's a difference between a kid, you know, pancaking a defender as opposed to torquing him and wrestling to the ground. But you like to see a mean streak, you know, a guy that takes it to the I always say the echo of the whistle, but, you know, you got a kid that can play hard and play to the whistle, but play under control and not hurt his team.
How about a kid who's multi-sport? Where are you at on that? Do you come to a point where this kid's either all football or other stuff? Some coaches like to see athletes. Some want them to see being a specialist.
Yeah, I was a multi-sport kid growing up. I played baseball and football in high school. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it just adds to the kids, adds a different dimension to the kid that's being recruited. It shows that he's capable of excelling in different environments. You know, whereas football, he might be the number one top dog on the football team, but might be the backup second baseman on the baseball team, but he's willing to play that role. I think more than just athletic ability, it shows what he's about in the team setting and that he's coachable and, you know, in a wide variety of areas. And so, you know, I would always encourage kids to play multiple sports. And I know with the, you know, the club sports, AAU, club baseball, year-round baseball, things like that, it becomes more harder because I think parents push their kids to excel in one sport, you know, trying to grasp the gold ring and a full scholarship. But right. You'll see all the kids that signed this year and that'll get drafted. And most of those kids are all double or triple sport players. So I would always encourage players and athletes to participate in more than one sport.
Talking with Kevin Mawai for a couple of minutes, Hall of Fame finalist with the Super Bowl coming up. You learned to play the game of football, if I read correctly, as a youth in Germany. Explain that story and how it worked for you.
Well, my dad was born and raised in Hawaii, and he joined the Army at an early age. And Fast forward several years later, we ended up being stationed in Hanau, Germany. My mom worked at the post commissary where her boss, the manager, was actually the football coach of one of the teams on base and encouraged us to come out and play. And I did. And I played for the Hanau Panthers. Lou Moses was my first football coach. And the first day I fell in love with it. I knew that that's something I wanted to do. I wanted to do nothing else. I came home from practice, told my mom I wanted to play in the NFL. And man, I'm 48 now. So that's 40 years ago, and I lived a dream that most kids only hope to live. But it was a great experience. I played 2 years of flag football for the Hanau Panthers under Coach Moses, and I played 2 years of tackle there. One was my dad, it was the coach, and then we had another coach my last year before we moved to Louisiana and started playing for my junior high and high school teams. And I always had a love for the game, and still do.
How did you study and learn the game in Germany? Who helped you there?
Well, like I said, we had a great coach, Coach Moses, and it's kind of funny. He taught you how to just appreciate the game, even at such an early age, at 8 years old, respecting the game. And he was my first coach, taught me the positions I played. And I was a quarterback, when I first started playing in flag football, my first year of tackle. So, I was a little bit skinnier and a little bit more mobile than I am now, but he was the first coach that really taught me the game of football, and I really respected him for that, and to this day still remember him fondly and haven't seen him in over 30 something years, but he's a guy that I credit with instilling the love of the game for me.
When did you know, Kevin, you were going to be good at this game? I'm not asking about Hall of Fame good, but when did you know you were going to be good?
Yeah. When I started getting recruited in high school, I knew that I would have an opportunity to play on a big stage, and I did. I went to LSU, but it was probably about my third year in college where I knew that I was better than a lot of guys I was playing with and around. And I developed through college. I played left tackle when I was brought in as a center, and then I ended up playing guard. So the multiplicity in positions helped me, but I always had football practice and workouts were never a grind. I hate that word.
Right.
If it's such a grind, I think you need to go find something else. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the process. I enjoyed everything about it, all because I wanted to be the best that I could possibly be. And but it was probably around my third year in college where I knew that I had the opportunity because I was better than the guys around me. And then get to the NFL, and I just played my game. I never wanted to be the best. I just wanted to be the best that I could be, and I played it with a passion. I played it with a love, and I think when you have the ability matched with the love of the game, then something special really happens.
Okay, as the career unfolds, and most players that I talk to through doing this through the years don't like to talk about themselves. I get that going into this question. When did you know that you might be Hall of Fame consideration worthy?
Man, probably I played for the Jets for 8 years, and it was probably into my sixth year with the Jets, seventh year maybe. I'd already been to 5 Pro Bowls, and the first I ever heard somebody mention the possibility of the Hall of Fame was around that time. And like I said, it was never a goal of mine. I don't think guys that get into the Hall of Fame, their goal is to be a Hall of Famer. Their goal is just to be the best that they can be, or maybe even best in the game. For me, I just wanted to be great at what I did. But I did my research and want to know how many centers were in the Hall of Fame, how many modern day versus old timers, and I had that list in my locker from that year, probably the 2003 till the end of my career.
Wow.
Never with the goal of trying to get to the Hall of Fame, but just knowing who was there and respecting and honoring the guys that came before me. And then as my career ended, I look back and the things I accomplished, what I individually did to change the position and what changed the way people thought about the center position. That's when I knew that I had a pretty special career, and that I set the bar for a lot of players and a lot of coaches to try to live up to.
Who's the guy that you look back on and say, I don't know why I couldn't figure him out? Is there somebody you lined up across from that's like, I love competing against him, but I'll tell you what, he got me a few more times than I care to remember.
No, there's some. I think anybody that plays this game that looks back and says, I never got, is lying to themselves and lying to everybody else. But, You know, John Randall today and back then, I always say he's the best defensive lineman I ever played against. He played all five positions along the defensive front. He ran, you know, he had a motor that was nonstop, and he had a mouth that matched it. And I mean, sure, he got me a bunch of times, but I got him as well. I matched up well with guys like that because my athletic ability, Vince Wilfork, Ted Washington were tough guys to play against because I didn't have the size and the power to overpower them. I had to play smart football with those guys. So I can't say just one guy. I mean, you know, one thing I learned late in my career, Mike Munchak taught me this, is to respect your opponents, but don't give them too much respect because you're out there playing with them. They should respect you just as much. And I always felt like if I just go out there and play my game and do what I dictated how the defense was going to play against me and not the other way around. And so to say one guy, I can't say that. There's guys that got into my head every now and then and guys that I had a particular bent against them.
Yeah.
But nobody that just said, man, I don't like playing this guy because I just struggle with them.
Before I get you out of here, you do some work off the field, not just some work, quite a bit of work with the Children's Cup and with the First and Goal Challenge. Tell me about the charitable side, what you're involved in and why.
Well, you know, it took me about 2 or 3 years into the league to understand that the NFL and playing in the NFL it's a platform for you to make a difference. And so through friendships with people who started Children's Cup, my wife and I felt like we needed to do something greater with the platform. So we started sowing into that ministry. Mm-hmm. I actually took our kids on a 2-week missions trip to Africa with Children's Cup. And the director is a really good personal friends of ours. And so we wanted to be able to take what we did in NFL and use it for a greater purpose. And that's what Children's Cup does. It provides feeding centers and education centers and schools for the underprivileged in Africa and you know, other countries. And so we're still close with them to this day and support them financially. The First and Goal Challenge was something that I started when I was with the New York Jets with Winthrop University Hospital. They were just starting their child life program to where it makes transition into hospital for pediatrics a lot less scary for them. And so I wanted to be a part of that selfishly because my kids were toddlers at the time. And had they gone to the hospital, we would have benefited from it. But through that program, we raised funds every year that I played there to help them build out their child life services program. And though I'm not tied to them anymore and haven't been for several years, you know, I've looked back and done research and stuff and saw that program is still going on and still going strong. So part of my legacy is off the field is helping build that program and being a part of the Children's Cup and some of the other ministries that I've worked with closely financially and personally. And we just believe it's our responsibility to take the platform from the NFL that it's given me and use it to make a difference. And if you always think it's about yourself, then your life, I think, is unfulfilled. But the legacy I left on the field is unquestionable. What I want to do is make sure I leave legacy off the field as well. And hopefully I've done that.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is great stuff. I'm sure you could sit with offensive linemen or any kid in the Arizona State football program and walk them through hey, when you're done playing, here's some things you should consider doing on the charitable side.
Absolutely.
That's a great message. Great message. Enjoy the visit very much. Best of luck with the Hall of Fame announcement. Kevin, thanks.
Thank you very much. You guys take care. God bless. Forks up.
Kevin Mawai with us there at Arizona State University. Sports360AZ.com. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona. Stay with us.
Hail from the state of Arizona. I'm your host, Devin Henry, and we are going all the way to Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's the big one going on right now. And joining us on the inside lane, he is one of only two drivers to sweep USAC's prestigious Triple Crown, a multi-time Copper World Classic champion, one of the youngest drivers to qualify for the Indy 500, the 2007 Chili Bowl runner-up, racing for McKinney Taylor Yaley, driver the number 2 J from Phoenix, Arizona. It's JJ Yaley. JJ, thanks for joining me, man.
Thanks for having me. Everything's pretty nice here so far in Tulsa, so we'll hope that it continues along that same path.
Yeah, so the last time I saw you in person at the Chili Bowl, you're driving those 47 cars. Lately, you've been driving the 1ST. Of course, for those of you who have trouble, that's first is what the number is. But now you're the 2JJ. Excuse me for possibly being obvious, but was this someone's idea to play on your JJ name? I'm just curious. I got to know, man.
It is. And, honestly, that was my original that's been my original number when I was a rookie starting racing in 1991. So it was 2J, always kind of was that. And, when I was 1ST, I had another partner with the midget that I run here at the Chili Bowl. And I've run that for a number of years. And just, drivers always have that, that thing where you get a little nervous about and worried about, and we're a little superstitious, so wasn't getting it done. So I thought, I'm going to go back to my original number for the Chili Bowl, since it's a car that that I own. So back to 2J, which they usually make you run a letter when you have 350 360 entries. They run out of numbers, so they start issuing you a letter. So like you said, it's great to be at this race. That's obviously this is my this is my 24th attempt at taking home the Golden Driller. I've finished everywhere except for the top of that podium, so that's our goal. We built a new car here. I have the sponsor for my Cup car from Texas Maximum Elevation Off-Road, and just looking to be one better than I've done here previously.
Yeah, back in 07, you were runner-up to your former NASCAR teammate, Tony Stewart. Now this year, this time around, you just raced last night, fifth place in the Race of Champions. Now it's your qualifying day. It's the big, big day. Thanks for taking the time to join us on your qualifying day. You have eight career Saturday A-Main, eight A-Main appearances. So when you're looking at your qualifying day, what pops out to you as what needs to get done today to get you ready to either go into the alphabet soup or wait all day on Saturday to hop into the A?
Well, usually for me, it's either one or the other. Everything goes like clockwork, and we have a great, great preliminary night, and everything goes well. Or, it seems like I've had more situations where we've gone through the heat race, gone through the qualifier, been one of the top 5 or 6 point getters, and then just get caught up in some kind of mess in the preliminary night feature, and it just, it creates issues and puts you back into what happens on Saturday in that alphabet soup. So, we've battled electrical issues, motor brakes, and like I said, getting crashed. So, sometimes, it's a matter of weighing your options. What's the best thing? Is a sixth place finish in your preliminary night that's, obviously going to put you about a B main on Saturday better than going for it and it going bad and you being in an E main or, or maybe even worse. So, those are the things I'll have to do as a driver on the fly and make the decision. But, last year we just were kind of mediocre, finished seventh, wasn't what we really wanted. So, like I said, I've built a brand new race car to come here this year and hope that some of the things have changed are going to, speed me up to where we can put ourselves in contention and try to win.
Now, I constantly try, and I know you do too, PR people for racing, trying to tell people why racing is important. And this Chili Bowl throws people off because I say 360 drivers racing midgets, and they go, what are they racing? I'm like, no, midget race cars. But what is the toughest part? Can you pin down what the hardest part of running against 360 other guys over the span of an entire week? Is there a way to pin down what the most difficult part of this process is at the Chili Bowl Nationals?
It's usually just a matter of kind of either dodging the other competitors or really just trying to outguess the racetrack. And, for whatever reason, the clay here for this event doesn't hold the moisture or give you the grip that it used to. And, I don't know if it's a matter of they've mixed some new product in with it or if it just, kind of lost some of that stickiness and it's kind of wore out. But for whatever reason, the racetrack continues to kind of change and evolve. And for me, I don't race dirt as often. So, it's a matter of kind of, leaning back on all the things I used to do. And some of those things work, some of those things don't work. So, there's a little bit of trial and experimentation that goes on, which is difficult when you get such a limited amount of laps. So, luckily for me, I was able to use last night as kind of a test session and see what we could get going. And, like I said, we were coming on strong there. The latter part of the champion race, I missed fourth place by just a few inches and felt pretty comfortable with the car. So, That's the goal here for the rest of the afternoon, is kind of tweak and make some changes and see if I can't find a little extra speed.
Now, when you talk about winners, of course, you are you swept the USAC Triple Crown Championship, Silver Crown, Midget, Sprint Cards all in a single year. But when it comes to the Yaley household, I feel like it might be a little bit of a stronghold trying to figure out who's the best. Your wife is a better half dash champion. And then your daughter, who did a phenomenal intro of you at Bristol a couple of years ago, she was most recently Miss North Carolina preteen as well. And on top of that, she's won a few other competitions, I think, as well. What is the competition like in this household, JJ, trying to be number one?
It's tough. And unfortunately for me, after my wife won the Better Half Dash, the trophy that they presented her with is about 6 feet tall. So, you know, sometimes it pains me when I walk in the house and I see that trophy sitting there, because she does have the biggest trophy in the house. But it's you know, obviously everything's about family, and you know, I think with competition we kind of make ourselves all better. And you know, my daughter's now 13; she plays on our golf team, so we now are playing golf on the regular basis as a family, which is also always a competition. So, you know, I mean, that's been my life since I was a kid, and you know, that's kind of what drives you to make yourself better. So it's always friendly and good, but yeah, it's always exciting at the Yaley household for sure.
Now, I want to reminisce a little bit before we let you go off to your qualifying day. We're almost coming up on the 10-year anniversary of the final race at Manzanita Speedway, one of the most historic tracks in the world, really. And I just want to talk a little bit about Manzanita Speedway. I remember way back when you would like to rip it around there on the half mile every now and again. One day during hot laps, you ripped it a little bit too hard. I think you went over the turn three fence and had to outrun the junkyard dogs on the other side of that wall. But coming up on 10 years after Manzanita, you know, you were there for Copper World, you were there for Western Worlds, other races as well. Looking back at Manzanita, what did you learn there, whether it be from your dad, Cactus Jack Yaley, or just racing there in general, that brings you to where you are today?
You know, I mean, for all the dirt tracks that I've raced at, you know, around the world, I mean, obviously Manzanita, for its time, was, you know, one of those three crown jewels. You had Eldora, Knoxville, and Manzanita. And, you know, unfortunately, just, you know, location and issues and growth, you know, it gobbled up Manzanita like it did Ascot and some of the other famous racetracks, which is, you know, obviously very disappointing. But it was, you know, it was such a tough racetrack. I mean, it was a big, fast half mile, which there's not a lot of those left in the country. And you know, it was tricky. It had great grip. You know, you had the quarter mile that was a really a stellar quarter mile to run as well. But you know, between the two, and you know, always made the front straightaway an interesting place to try to get through because of those, you know, the transition between the two. You know, I remember as a kid running around the grandstands at Manzanita when my parents would drop me off where they go to the pits. And you know, a ton of memories from that place. And, you know, it's, like I said, it's very disappointing that it's now gone. But, you know, I know there's some other great dirt tracks in the area that are thriving now. So, you know, when one thing goes away, something else pops up, which is good for the racing there in Arizona.
And then one more quick thing to look back on: the racing world is mourning on the loss of J.D. Gibbs. Of course, you raced for Joe Gibbs Racing back in NASCAR for a little over a year, and you had interactions with JD where you kind of broke into NASCAR. So just tell me a little bit, because I didn't know him or anything, but you hear just phenomenal things about JD and what he did for our sport.
No, JD was definitely one of the good guys. He always wore a huge smile, and there usually wasn't you know, a lot that got him down. And you know, that kind of personality was definitely infectious to the group and the organization. And you know, obviously when he told us, or you know, he told everyone of his disease, and you know, he could see the rapid decline in his health. You know, it was just, you know, sometimes you sit there and wonder why something like that could happen to such a great person. But you know, his family, they were great people, and you know, unfortunately they're gonna have to get along without him. And you know, he's gonna be one of those guys that a lot of people are gonna miss. And you know, just kind of a sad situation, but you know, we'll definitely always keep him in our mind and our prayers, and you remember the good times that he shared with us.
So before I let you go off to your qualifying day, I want to run a little segment I like to call Quick Time. I'm going to give you some rapid fire questions, looking for some rapid fire answers back. Some of them are factual, some of them are opinion. You ready, JJ?
Yep, ready to go.
All right, this one might be tough. Favorite racetrack, dirt or pavement? Either or.
It would be dirt.
And then anyone that comes to mind specifically?
Specifically, my favorite dirt track is going to be Ventura, California.
Ooh,
ones are left, or maybe, or even like Lima, Ohio. It's just a great little third mile, high bank, fun place to go. There's a lot of good ones around there, but Ventura has always been one of my favorites.
Love Ventura. So I heard you're a tinkerer when it comes to the race car. How many times have you changed the setup already this weekend?
Four.
Four times?
Four going on five.
You're going on five and
four
only
going
one
on
race?
Five. I've only run one race, correct.
All right, last question here. If you can pick any kind of car that you are most comfortable in, the most where you feel behind or you feel the most at home behind the wheel, what kind of car is that?
It's probably going to be a sprint car.
Sprint car. Yeah, good old Absolutely. Times back at Manzanita. Good to have you in NASCAR, but it's great to see you back on dirt all the time, JJ. Thanks for joining me here on the Inside Lane.
All right, thank you.
All right. Hey, good luck in your qualifying night. Kick some butt for us for Arizona.
All right. You appreciate it very much.
That was the Inside Lane. J.J. Yaley, the driver of the 2J, going to be racing for McKinney Taylor Yaley Racing, basically. So we're going to take another quick break. When we come back on the other side, another Arizona racer. It's going to be Stevie Sussex joining us real quick here on the Brad Sussmat Show. I'm going to keep on going with this whole racing thing. I'm trying to teach y'all a little bit of something, and to help do that, we're getting a little call in here from Tulsa, Oklahoma. He's going to be driving the 21R for Boss Factory Racing in the Chili Bowl this year from Levine, Arizona. It's Speedy Stevie Sussex. Stevie, thanks for joining me, man.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Glad to have you around. Biggest question is, you practiced on Monday. Your qualifying day isn't until Friday. What in the world are you doing right now to keep yourself entertained these few days?
Well, I haven't been able to do too much. I had my tooth extracted last Friday, so I'm on antibiotics, so I can't do any like drinking or anything. So I pretty much just been going to the casino, I guess, and trying to win some money. So
there you
and,
go.
Obviously, just mainly just studying the racetrack. So
yeah,
I feel like I'm a little bit more intuitive this year on how the track's been.
Yeah, and of course, a little bit more, you go out there a little bit better. Now, you're not always a midget driver. You do a heck of a lot more sprint cars, but how did this ride at Boss Factory Racing come up for this year?
I didn't have a ride up until, what was it, probably like the 15th of December, and I didn't really have any plans on going to Chili Bowl, and I was talking to Flea a little bit, like in November, the guy that wrenches on it. And we were trying to put something together, and it just never worked out right off the bat. And then I had a couple of my sponsors that really wanted to go, so I called Flea again, and I'm like, hey, how are we going to make this work? And we were able to come up with it. And so I'd like to thank the Equiteam. They were a big part of me being here. So
that's awesome, man. And, of course, you were at Ventura for Turkey Night. Not the exact same situation, but what makes the Chili Bowl on this little tiny bull ring in a midget so unique?
The fact that if you mess up, you might as well load up. it's so hard. Like you have to, you can't make mistakes. You can't get unlucky. It's, I don't know. When I go into the Chili Bowl, I just try to have fun, and I have to understand that if it's not meant to be, then it's not meant to be. And all you can do is make as many minimum mistakes as you can and hope you're in a fast car. And just hope no one spins out in front of you. That's the main thing.
You won a prelim heat just a couple of years ago, and of course there's over a dozen guys from Arizona out at the Chili Bowl right now racing this year out of 360 of them. But what's the interactions like when you run into some guys that you actually know pretty well when you're out there in Tulsa?
I cheer for all the Arizona guys, so I'm actually staying with Ty Mahako this weekend, and so he was pretty pumped. He did a pretty good job last night. So, I always root for the hometown guys.
Now, of course, lots of talent on the plane ride over, I'm sure. You tweeted that there was quite a few guys in there. What is it like when you hop onto the plane to head on over to Oklahoma and you go, man, these are the guys I'm racing with? I know when my dad raced back in 07 in hot laps, or I think it was back in 05, he's doing slide jobs with Sammy Swindell, and he's going, oh, my God, I'm doing slide jobs against Sammy Swindell.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I mean, we got on that plane ride, and it's like there's probably five guys here capable of starting in a main event on Saturday, which is a big deal, obviously. So, I don't know. I'm pretty good buddies with pretty much all of them, so just they're just as competitive as I am, and they come here for the same reason. So.
And you've been to the Chili Bowl a few times now over. You start on Friday. You get to watch the track for the week, and then you have your past experiences. What's the number one thing that you've learned at the Chili Bowl? As you already mentioned, don't screw up because you might be done for the week, but what's the key? Well, what's the key to making it to Saturday and actually being able to be a part of the alphabet soup at all?
I wish I knew that. I've never done it, so I wish I had the answer to that.
Well, see,
like I said, you just got to be fast, and you got to take care of every, or you got to take advantage of every opportunity on the racetrack as far as there's a door open, and you pretty much just got to take it. You can't really wait around at the Chili Bowl. You got to go.
Well, Stevie, thanks for your time, man. Hope you start feeling better soon, and best of luck to you on Friday night. Can't wait to be watching you.
Appreciate it, buddy.
All righty. That's Stevie Sussex. He's going to be driving the 21R for Boss Factory Racing. Got him here on the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports360AZ.com. Anything Arizona sports, of course, you can go ahead and take a look. Everything college, high school, pros, especially football, and all of that hoopla. But nonetheless, I'm Devin Henry filling in for Brad today on the Brad Sesmat Show. Apologies in advance for, you know, a lot of racing. I enjoyed it. I hope you did too. Maybe you learned a little bit something about whether it be the Chili Bowl Nationals or just racing in general. But nonetheless, Brad said, go get some racing, guys. And I said, are you sure you want me to do that? Are you really sure you want me to go out and do that? Because I'll try my best to go ahead out and do that. So we'll leave you with that. I'm Devin Henry, our chairman of the board today, Kennedy Wilkerson. Our producer, well, Eric's not here, so we try our best between me and Kennedy to figure it all out at the exact same time. But nonetheless, it works out, and you guys are welcome. Brad is back tomorrow. You don't got to deal with me 2 days in a row. You are welcome. This was the Brad Sesmat Show. Be sure to keep it on Sports360AZ.com for all your Arizona sports news.